Hey guys, welcome back to part two of this episode. We had so much fun, we had to chop it in half. Here you go. Hello, I'm Jay, and this is Highbrow Theater, a podcast where we analyze plays so you don't have to. Today is a little different because we are going to be analyzing a musical, Les Miserables. That is. Another part of the discussion is going to be about Taylor Swift. These two topics are more connected than you think. Today's guests love musicals and are Swifties to the core. Those two lovely people are Mary Maxwell and Michelle Holder. Hello, guys. It's so great to have you here. Grease Live won 5 Emmys, but there were no nominations for any of the actors. It was all backstage, like, technical stuff.
I mean, they did deserve all of those.
Jordan Fisher and Aaron Tveit singing Night Changes? Whatever.
Jordan Fisher is... Wow. I'm revealing myself as being so straight right now. Never mind.
He's a handsome young man.
Speaking of straight people who make children, there's a child in the show who who gets shot and died, and there's no need for a spoiler alert because it's been like 800 years. So how do we feel about children singing in shows? Because I know I don't love it, especially when they're all doing it together, because it's either scary or church.
I think the only way that I have ever enjoyed a group of children singing is Home Alone. I think after like the Home Alone soundtrack is about it. When you're in an audience and all of a sudden you hear a group of children singing, you're like, uh-oh.
That's John Williams right there for you, though.
It's John Williams. Like, he was like, hey, Annie, I can't sit there. No offense to anybody who has done Annie and likes Annie. I can't stand Annie. I do, though, really love Fun Home, and I do love Matilda. I think they do a very good job of having children singing. I also recognize that I'm, like, planning on going in educational theater with children. I love the children. It's just that when they start singing, there's something very jarring about it. But, like, it's good. I will say, though, the way they use children in Les Mis works very well, because, boy, does it rip your heart out. Like, it's slightly creepy, but it hurts.
Well, so I grew up watching Annie. Like, that was one of my favorite movies as a kid, so I was desensitized to that pretty quickly. But I like Annie. Like, I don't mind choruses of children. They are creepy, I will say that. I think Cosette in Les Mis is very creepy. Like, she's a sad little, like, pale ghost child just sweeping the floor, talking about, like, kind of, like, pseudo-heaven. Like, she kind of wants to die.
It's weird. And, like, also sometimes they play it. By the way, I hate criticizing child performers. I think that that's, like... It's just a weird line to walk, but sometimes the directors will stage these kids in a way where they are just staring out, and they're like, there is a cat, and I'm like, no, honey boo-boo, you're staring right into my soul, and this is terrifying.
Castle in a Cloud is cute, but it's, like, really creepy. But I do think that, okay, so the kid that dies is Gavroche. Gavroche is one of my favorite characters. He is, like, this, like, wild little, like, street urchin that's like, fuck the cops. He, like, basically tells Javert to fuck off, like, multiple times. And even when he, like, dies, he's singing this song that's basically like, fuck you guys, I do what I want. He dies. So, like, Gavroche is, like, he is of the people. Like, he is the quintessential, like, he is, like, shaped by society in the novel. So he's kind of like a symbol of, like, oppression in general. And I think that having that in the body of, like, a 12-year-old, like, screaming child is just, like, genius.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I think Gavroche and Fantine are, like, the two hearts of each of their acts. Like, I think Fantine definitely is the guiding light of Act 1, and Gavroche, in a way, is very Amelia in the guiding light.
Because when they kill Gavroche, you're like, oh, no, this is not
gonna
end well.
You're like, there's no sympathy anymore for this side. Like, we are all in.
Like, if the child dies, like, everybody gonna die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have all seen a production of this on a stage in some shape or the other. What aspects would you say worked for you and what didn't? I guess worked meaning, like, made it an enjoyable or unenjoyable experience. I took a class in theater in high school, and we had to go see a live production of something and write a paper on it. A nearby college was doing Les Mérois, and we could only afford the nosebleeds at the time because we were high schoolers. At this point, I didn't know I needed glasses, and I could barely see anything what was going on. But like the huge flags was that, I think that was the most emotional for me, because, you know, flags
meant to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, it is the story of a revolution. So like flags are like, yeah, like, yeah. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, I think the props in the show are definitely, like, the flags are meant to, it's so simple, but it works so well.
I think the show works, and I think also why this show works as a concert really well is because, like, you don't need to do too much to the story to have it, like, shine through, because the more, like, props and stuff you add, the more, like, muddling it is. There's already a very complex story being told, and they're using very complex themes with the music, so you have to be paying attention anyway. You don't want to give people too much to like pay attention to. So productions that are like where they overly dress the set and stuff like that, I don't think are going to work as well. So when they don't have that, when it's like more minimal props, moments like the end of One Day More where they start waving the flags around, like those become a lot more poignant.
Oh yeah. So like I said, this was a mega musical in the beginning, and it has always kind of stayed a mega musical, but the one big set piece that has evolved is the turntable. So history lesson, like when the show first came to be, there was a massive turntable in the center. It was the barricade. Like, it was revolutionary when this thing was on a stage. Now, the newest revival, the 2014 revival of the show, it used media. It used screens and projection. It did not have a barricade. But let me tell you, as somebody who has seen the, I have seen the turntable production, and I have seen the Broadway and the touring versions of the screen media production. I prefer the screen and the media production because it worked. It was,
looked good.
It looked so good, and it wasn't distracting. It really just let everything pop, and the story really was able to shine, and they really got to play with props and costumes a bit more, and I appreciated that. So
I was going to say, it's one of the few times that I mean, not necessarily a few, but one of the, like, to go about reviving a very classic production with, like, a new take on the production itself, there was a lot of, like, praise for it. It wasn't as heavily criticized as I thought it would be. Like, people were very receptive to it because I think it really allows for the story, the music, and the performances to shine through just that much more. Because after the movie itself, like, people became very focused on the acting part of Les Mis, because people realized it's a very complex character. I mean, a lot of the characters are very complex characters, I mean.
I think I counted when I saw it, and there were 6 spoken words in the whole thing.
I don't think I've ever counted.
It's right around that number. And also, I think there's only 2 scripted as spoken, and then the rest can be, you know, acting.
There's a lot of ad lib, I know that, like, just the yelling, like in moments of tension they'll be like wah, 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 wah.
It's very much just so like Great Comet, where the ones that are written to be spoken are, they're like we chilling. Said everything's intentional, they're meant to be chilling, like and it works. It sure as hell works.
We were speaking about adaptations earlier, and this musical had an adaptation into the movie. So it's an adaptation of an adaptation. Like, is that too far? Where's the line? Is justice done? I like the live performances on TV. It's definitely different, and I think you need the correct hands at the helm in order to, like, get a musical person on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think Les Mis is interesting because you're right. There have been so many adaptations. Like, there's a movie, and then right before the movie was the 25th anniversary concert. And I personally am of the opinion that I don't think the movie would have come to the fruition it did if it weren't for the 25th anniversary concert.
Oh, yeah. That led to a lot of the casting decisions, too.
100%. And Michelle mentioned the concert a little bit earlier, but that concert was great because it proved like you can keep it simple and you get the story across and you can cry. What happened with the movie was that it was just insane. The production budget for that movie is ridiculous. And I think I appreciate the fact that they didn't change the story except for a couple parts in Act Two that I'm still not over. There's some ordering things that I'm not a huge fan of, but it's fine.
Yep, same. I would agree with that.
But like, there are things in the movie that are just like respectable. Like Anne Hathaway let her hair get cut on camera for Fontaine, and that's just ridiculous. Like there, I will say, with the exception of like maybe Russell Crowe, the performers in that movie, really, you could tell how much they bought in and they were invested, and that I appreciate that. Like that is a big reason why I enjoy watching it.
So Tom Hooper, the director for the Les Mis 2012 movie, made every member of the cast, he gave them all a copy of the novel and had them read it. So everyone that went into that movie was familiar with the source material versus, I mean, I'm sure they listened to the cast album too or whatever. The thing about Tom Hooper and his approach with Les Mis is that it was really grounded more on realism. Like I think that because he was trying to make an Oscar bait movie, I watched a video about this the other day, so I have a lot to say. So because he was making like an Oscar bait movie, he wanted to, you know, play more into like the high art concept. Like aesthetically, it is a very pretty movie. He does like colors very well. Like I said, it's grounded more in realism. So I think he wanted to like build the world of the novel and let the musical take place within that. Oh yeah, that goes back to like Anne Hathaway and like them actually cutting her hair. Like a lot of the stunts, I guess, they were using like very practical effects. Like they were just happening there. And like how he uses live singing. And he gets criticized for that a lot, but I think that it was perfect for this specific adaptation. He was trying to make it very real and brutal. And I think that live singing in that context, like, allows a little bit more emotion to come through because it's like the actor is in the headspace in that scene. So it's going to be like a more satisfying take for the audience. A lot of this movie is about getting like satisfaction in these musical moments, like seeing these actors just perform.
Yeah. And like, that's a musical. You don't have like, unless that one specific part in Phantom where it's pre-recorded, like a music, that's what makes a musical, you know?
No, yeah, I was a big fan of, I know I'm in the minority. I know people don't like the, like, Les Mis 2012 movie. I really liked it. There are things, of course, that I disagree with. Mr. Hooper had some ideas
that I was so, yes, they were definitely ideas. No, I'm with you. Any adaptation of Les Mis, I enjoy. Of the past decade, my favorite, other than the 25th anniversary concert, is the BBC adaptation of the book that took some aspects of the musical that has Lily Collins in it, because holy crap, it's so well done, so good.
Well, yeah, and the thing about like that adaptation, because like when it comes to the faithfulness of an adaptation, because the movie is an adaptation of an adaptation, the stage show, the musical, doesn't necessarily do justice to the main source material. It tells like a very specific side of the story. I think that happens in the novel. So like, of course, the movie is not going to be able to get the essence of what the original source material is. I think that's why the BBC version works better, because it was working more directly from the source material rather than an adaptation of it.
So Mary, we talked about casting decisions earlier. Mary said she has a surprise for me, and this also leads into the finale of this episode. Apparently Taylor Swift was supposed to be cast in the Le Mojo movie, but she has withheld the reason from me, Mary.
Okay, so when it came to the Les Mis movie, as Michelle said, it was Oscar bait, and they were not ashamed of trying to get as many big names as they could in this movie as possible. For the role of Eponine.
Yes, I knew this. I didn't know why she...
This is the short list. Scarlett Johansson, Leah Michelle, Miley Cyrus, Taylor Swift, Evan Rachel Wood.
Oh,
okay.
Oof.
So what happened was, of these actresses, only one made it to screen tests, and that was Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift made it to the second to last round, where before you get the casting call, she did the screen test with the entire cast. She had done vocal cuts. Like, she was pretty much all in. She was about to be cast as Eponine. But, so I just discovered this last week, and I can't believe it. So we all know that Samantha Barks ended up being Eponine. She was Eponine in the 25th anniversary concert. She's also Nick Jonas's ex-girlfriend. What a lucky man. She ended up being cast, but what happened was Tom Hooper, right before casting Taylor Swift, thought about it and was like, you know, Eponine is supposed to be somebody that's passed over and ignored. I don't think Taylor Swift is somebody that will be passed over and ignored. Now, here's the thing. Valid. In saying this in multiple interviews, he is then inherently saying that Samantha Barks.
Oh my God. How dare he?
Exactly.
Mr. Hooper.
Exactly. So you're saying Samantha Barks is somebody everybody would pass over? Because absolutely not. Long story short, we were this close to having Taylor Swift as Eponine in this movie. But instead, when he got the rights to cast, the first phone call he made for casting was Taylor. And he said, Taylor, and apparently Taylor had said in earlier interviews, I just read so many interviews about this, that she would do anything else that Tom Hooper was interested in. And of course it had to be Cats. And Tom Hooper calls her up and is like, hey, I want you to be in Cats. First role. First person that was signed onto the project was Taylor Swift. She didn't know what she was doing. And I love this going into Cats for like 10 seconds. I love that everybody on the cast of Cats has essentially admitted in the past year that they were like, that it was an acid trip. We knew it was a mess, but we love doing it. Yeah. I can't believe anybody would think that you would pass over Samantha Barks. Like, totally understandable for Taylor, but also upsetting.
Right.
As interesting as it would have been to have Taylor in the role of Eponine, Samantha Barks is iconic. Like, other than maybe Leah Salonga, like, she is, like, a definitive Eponine.
Oh, yeah. If I think of Eponine, I'm literally going to just forever think of Leah and Sam Barks. Yeah, for sure. Like,
She's perfect.
But also, I think a lot of people think that Taylor was supposed to be cast as Cosette. I think that that's just what everybody's brain went to.
I could have seen that more, yeah. But there's no way Taylor could have hit those notes at that age.
No. But now I know that there are screen tests out there of Taylor as Eponine somewhere. And I know that Tom Hooper, if you could hit me up with the screen test of Taylor Swift, I promise you I will not put them on reddit.com/r/Taylor Swift. I promise.
Give me the cut, drink with me verses. Give them to me, Tom.
Okay. Mary also said that she thinks some Taylor Swift albums were inspired by musicals. In musical theater. Mary, do you mind explaining why? And also, are you going to agree or disagree?
So this is one of those things that Michelle and I have talked about in the past. Multiple times, rather passionately. She is so great at storytelling, and musical theater in and of itself is storytelling. So every album does read like a musical in certain aspects. The reason that Speak Now in particular is just, I wouldn't say that when you listen to it, you're thinking, oh, this is a musical. It's just that she has owned up to it having been inspired by musical theater. One, it is much more orchestral than her previous two albums, which would have been Fearless and her self-titled. She has a song on there called Haunted that is literally just like, it's made for an orchestra to go off.
The violin, it is literally, it's a production.
It's a production, yeah. The biggest piece of evidence here is if you look up Speak Now Tour Theater, every interview she did during her press junket for the tour, she talks about the fact that the entire blocking and set were inspired by her going to see Wicked and then going home and watching a bunch of musicals. So if you ever want to watch some bootlegs of the Speak Now Tour on YouTube, you'll see that every song is literally staged like an entire musical number. And it's not like every concert does that, but like she literally had like her dancers in wedding dresses and bridesmaids dresses. She had sets for every single song, and she had it somewhat storylined. I did not see this tour. I've only seen it, in videos. I've actually never seen her live. That's a whole other thing. It's fine. The other thing is, like, I have a playlist on my phone that's like Taylor Swift, the Jukebox Musical, and it's an order of songs in which I think that you could tell a really, you know, good story. And I'm sorry, but like, if you listen to mine, which is off of Speak Now, there's a part to, you know how there's like those Broadway numbers where it's the guy and the girl singing together and then they have that emotional revelation and then the whole ensemble joins them in singing? Mine literally is that, where they, and it's so well put, and so well put together, and it's just really made for ensemble pieces. I also, like, little factoid about Taylor Swift's career is, like, her start was musical theater, and I don't think a lot of people know that, but, like, she got kind of discovered when she was 9 years old doing community theater in Pennsylvania, where she was growing up, and that's how she started to get these gigs at cafes to start singing and performing her own, you know, stuff that she was writing. So she has a love for musical theater, and I think that's also very clear in the fact that she really was trying for Les Mis and then said yes to Cats immediately, despite the fact
her favorite musical is Ragtime, which I feel like is not like the favorite musical of musical person.
Well, when I realized that, like, she clearly has referenced Ragtime in past interviews without, like, me realizing until a couple months ago, I was like, oh, she knows her stuff, like, 100%. Yeah, and we all know she's good at building stories. I mean, like, hey, Folklore Album of the Year, congratulations.
Woo! Yes, queen.
But, like, that whole thing is vignettes. Like, not, like, she, yes, a lot of her songs are very personal, but she does a great job of just building these stories in one song or over an arc of 3 or 4 songs that you're like, dang, that could be, like, a whole musical right there. Like, you could build off of that immediately. And she has a Jukebox Musical in the future. Actually, it's not even an if. I think it's a when at this point. I think when there's a Taylor Swift Jukebox Musical in our lifetimes, it's going to be very transferable.
There's already, like, a workshop of one on 54 Below, which is, like, a theater club place in New York that, like, features performances from Broadway actors and stuff like that. Someone did, like, a little mini Taylor Swift Jukebox Musical. And, like, I watched it. And, I mean, the arrangements themselves weren't anything different. It was basically just the songs, and then sometimes they would fade into another song or whatever. But, like, it just made me realize, like, you could, like, Taylor has already been writing, like, musical songs, basically. Like, they are structured the same way. Like, they give, like, the same detail and, like, room for performance as a lot of musicals.
Try to tell me that 15 is not made for a mother figure to find a guitar in her attic and start singing to her daughter about all of the issues that she's going to run into when she starts her life in high school. Like, it is, there are so many moments where, like, I'm listening to a song and I know this is part of my theater brain, but I can just immediately see, like, walking, set, props. I know exactly what's going to happen.
It lends itself so well. So much of her music does.
Yeah. And I think a big thing is, like, if it ever does become a Jukebox Musical, I'm very passionate about this, it needs to be female led. Like, that's just, I feel like that's a lot of Taylor's career has been very vocal about the sexism that she has experienced in her musical career. She's also been very groundbreaking for women in the music industry. I mean, she's the first woman to win 3 albums of the year as of, what, however many weeks ago. That's where I see the story going. And also, it can't get overcomplicated. I feel like an issue with a lot of Jukebox Musicals is that they find all these songs and they're like, okay, what very serious plot can we come up with these not so serious songs? You can't make, like, Taylor Swift songs a wartime musical. Like, you got them. It has to be something that's very, easily relatable and transferable. And I just know that some Swifty on Tumblr has already created some, like, 1940s, 1950s
era World
War II musicals.
I'm sure there are so many of those, Mary. I don't even have to look. I can guarantee you there are.
And that's terrifying.
I think what Taylor would need to do is, like, I mean, even if it's not a I would love to have just an original musical from Taylor, nothing from her past works. And I think, like, to go the way of, like, Waitress or Once or The Last 5 Years, where it's like the focus is the music, like, you are just listening to it, and she has the ability to tell complex stories, as we've seen time and time again in her songs. So I would love for her to sit down and write like this kind of singer-songwriter musical. I think it would just be incredible.
I could totally see her pulling a Sarah Bareilles and doing the whole, I'm going to write the musical for music for Waitress. I'm then going to record my own album singing my own spins of my musical 100%. Theater songs. And then, oh, also 5 years later, I'm going to sign a deal and make an entire TV show based off of my first album. Like, I could totally see her pulling that when we are like 40-year-old wine moms.
Oh, I would love that. I would live for it.
Yeah.
So, like I said earlier, when I said Swifties to the core, I meant it.
So sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
We sound like freaks.
Full disclosure, Michelle has been a Swiftie forever. Like, she has never waned. What happened to me, it's so nerdy. So, like, I liked her in high school, you know, and she, like, 1989 and Red came out when I was in high school. Of course I'm going to love them. But I wasn't super into it until she disappeared, and then right before Reputation, somebody noticed, this is so geeky, somebody noticed that the coding on her website was changing every day, and each code changed was a hint towards Reputation. Like, her color scheme had changed to, like, Twilight Black, and, like, people were like, wait a second, something's happening. And I had just started being on Reddit, and, like, the Taylor Swift subreddit was not doing okay. And I just found it so entertaining. And then I got hooked again. And then for anybody who has seen the Reputation Stadium Tour on Netflix, I don't know how you could watch that and be like, oh yeah, she sucks. No, it's so good.
There's a reason that tour won awards. Like, it is a legitimate, like, incredible production.
Yeah, I am a born again Swiftie who, unfortunately, I think has drank more of the Kool-Aid than Michelle has in certain regards, like me having multiple mashups on YouTube now and also becoming TikTok famous because of Taylor Swift TikTok.
I just love listening to her. I don't really, like, I love fan, like, r/Taylor Swift. Shout out to you guys. You are the best community on Reddit.
Yes, if anybody, when I inevitably post the link to this on that subreddit, heyo.
Oh my god. The fandom stuff is fun. Like, Taylor drops Easter eggs or whatever, and those are fun to engage with. I do not have the attention span to sit there and look through lines of computer code. Like, Miss Swift, what kind of time do you have on your hands?
The thing is, like, it's one of those things that I truly don't think she actually thought fans were going to look at the coding, but somebody, there are Swifties out there who clearly are going to keep doing that every day to the end of time.
Well, and she like pays off. Happening. Like, it pays off for them. That's the thing about Taylor. Like, she gives and gives and gives for her fans. Like, she's one of the, I mean, obviously I know most artists appreciate their fans or whatever, but she really, like, goes above and beyond to show her appreciation for her fans.
Yeah. I know. Okay. So Jay, you're a new Swiftie, and you personally, I remember when, I think it was Folklore came out, you weren't a huge fan, I don't think initially, but also I get it, because when Folklore came out, we were being blessed with much more happy, like, pure pop. Like, I remember Chromatica came out around that time. I was really into oh my god, what is Dua's album called?
I was bringing that up.
Like, I was so into those at the time. And, like, if I wasn't actively trying to engage in Taylor, I don't think I would have been as obsessed with Folklore as I was in the beginning. But
yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's like Joanne. That I feel like Folklore is my Joanne.
Folklore is her. Yeah.
Yeah. I 100% agree with that. It just paid off exponentially more for her. 100%. Yeah.
Mary also sent me a playlist that was Taylor Swift songs that make me a horrible driver.
It's such a good playlist, though.
Is Better Than Revenge on there?
Oh, yeah.
Picture to Burn.
It's Picture to Burn, Should Have Said No, yes. Better Than Revenge, Enchanted. Like, it's all the songs that if you're driving on a country road, and if you close your eyes screaming a little bit too long, you're in trouble.
You will crash your car.
Yeah.
That also, like, gay people aren't good drivers anyways. So, like,
we're just exponentiating it. It's fine. Right. Everything's fine. Yeah, no, I have already, like, told my friends jokingly, I'm like, when that 1989 re-recording comes out this summer, which is likely to happen. When we get the new Romantics re-recording, don't let me go anywhere. Like, straight up.
I just got chills. No, listen. Okay, as excited as I am for 1989, like, Speak Now being re-recorded is literally going to change my life. I'm about to go through something.
Her best lyrical moments with her best vocal health.
Also, Red, State of Grace acoustic is gonna actually, like, come into my house and kill me in the middle of the night. Like, I cannot explain how I'm going to feel hearing Taylor's current vocals singing one of her most beautiful songs.
Yeah, for sure. I think, Jay, I think you have chosen a very entertaining time to be a new
Swiftie. She's giving right now. Like, Mother Swiftie, like...
She's just handing out gifts. And, like, the best part is, so for context, Jay tweeted out, I think I'm having a Swiftie awakening. I have never seen one of their tweets get so many likes so quickly.
It was like 2 a.m.
Everyone is low-key a Taylor Swift stan. Like, you don't know it, but you are.
All of your friends welcome you into the community with open arms. Like, welcome, brethren.
It happened because I was just, like, baked out of my gourd. And you know how you just sit there?
Oh, I have a Taylor Swift high playlist.
Oh, send that one.
And I was just sitting there in, like, silence for a long time. And then I emerged from my subconscious sleep. And I was like, I think I like Taylor Swift.
Yes!
And then now, it started.
It was me. What was the gateway song? Your way.
You're right.
What was the gateway song?
I think I did... It was Cruel Summer.
You're then, screwed.
Now I'm really into Welcome to New York and New Romantics and Out of the Woods.
Shut up. Okay, Welcome to New York and New Romantics. Welcome to New York was my first favorite song from 1989, and New Romantics is one of my top favorite Taylor Swift songs of all time.
It is by far and away.
It's perfect. So
Welcome to New York is literally the perfect act one opener. Like, you, my God, you picture
this is why I needed to, okay, we need to get back to what we were going to talk about, because I need to fight about this Speak Now being the most musical album.
Let me clarify. I think that it's just that Speak Now, I think, is the most inspired by musical theater. Do I think it's the most transferable? No. I think the most transferable for sure is either Red, 1989, or Folklore.
Well, it's not even a question of transferability. Red is a musical. Like, it is the, regardless of who each individual, like, song is about, like, I know she dated different men, whatever. Like, Red as a whole album is the story of her relationship. Like, it is already done for you. State of Grace, like, if there ever is a Taylor Swift jukebox musical, like, that has to be the act one opener. It has to be. It is the perfect, like, push forward into, like, a story, which is what Red is. Like, Red is, like, a very cohesive story, in my opinion.
Jay, have you listened to Red yet?
I think I listened to the first song, and then I had to go do something.
Yeah. The thing about Red is, like, on first listen, you're already into it. And then you learn the backstories of why some of the songs are ordered the way they are, and you're like, holy crap, she's crazy.
Like, I know a lot of artists do this, but Taylor very specifically, it started with her putting songs in specific, like, track slots, but then it progressed into her, like, being very intentional with the order of her album, which I think is a lot more common of a thing now. But, like, she had always, like, Swifties will know track 5 is always going to be, like, a very emotional song for Taylor. She, like, does this intentionally. She'll put that there on purpose. And she's always been good at having album openers and album closers. But I think Red was really the first album where, like, it was very clearly, like, explicitly thought out, because she was going to tell a story with this album. And the thing about Red is there are a lot of songs on there that I don't even like. Like, you can get rid of a lot of songs and still have the storyline, I think. But, if you sit there and listen to that album in order, like, like I said, she's telling you a story. Like, it is already a piece of theater.
Yeah. Oh, no, all it's right. it's an absolute journey of an album.
Thank you for that lovely conversation. We are now going to enter the lightning round. Crash sounds or something. Okay, so I'm going to ask each of you one question. There are two total. We'll go Mary, Michelle is the answers. Let's go. First one. Favorite Taylor Swift song title, ignoring the song context.
Willow.
My Tears Ricochet. For Ooh. Sure.
I love that. Is that different than Teardrops on My Guitar?
Isn't that just the ultimate symbol of Taylor's progression as an artist?
Yeah, you're right. Okay, next one. Last one. Favorite Taylor Swift lyric.
I can't decide between the two. So it's either, please don't ever become a stranger whose laugh I could recognize anywhere, or they told me all my cages were mental, so I got wasted like all my potential, and my words shoot to kill when I'm mad, and I have a lot of regrets about that.
Yeah, that's a good line.
Oh, yeah. Damn.
I'm probably biased, but they're both from either Folklore or Evermore. So the first one is from my favorite song off of Folklore, which is Peace, and it's The Devil's in the Details, but you've got a friend in me. Or my favorite song from Evermore, which is Cowboy Like Me. Shout out to Cowboy Like Me. Which is Now You Hang From My Lips Like the Gardens of Babylon. That is an amazing lyric. She also is a writer.
Well, thank you guys again for finishing this out with me. It was a wonderful time. I had so much fun. A lot of editing to do. But that's
so
what happens
sorry.
When you create art.
You're the literal worst.
Yeah.
So,
we held you hostage for 2 hours.
You're right. Now I could take these chains off. So if you would like to follow us and keep up with what we're doing, our Twitter is @highbrowtheater. We have a Patreon for exclusive behind-the-scenes content and audience participation. If you search Patreon and Highbrow Theater, you will find it. And where can we find you guys?
I am at Maria the Ginger on all platforms, TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, you name it. And I'm just Mary Maxwell on YouTube if you would like some Taylor Swift vibes.
I don't produce content, so follow me on Tumblr where all the cool kids are. It's moonlightepanine.tumblr.com. My ask box is always open. you can follow me on Twitter.
I will say it totally is.
You can follow me on Twitter where I tweet about mostly anime and Taylor Swift. And that's hey, it's _Mickey, MMICKEY.
Beautiful. Thanks for doing that again.
Please send your Android Lloyd Webber hate to Michelle. Please.
I would get so much. Literally, when Cats came out, like every person I'd ever talked to was like, "Oh, you want to see the worst content on the internet?"
I know. It's like how I know that if Hayley Williams and Taylor Swift ever do collab, I think 20 people at least are going to reach out to me and make sure I'm okay.
Yeah, we're gonna be checking on your like emotional state.
Won't be good.
Okay, I'm going to go pop up, I don't know. I'm going to go improve my mental state after being locked up in my closet for 2 hours.
Oh my god, I'm so sorry.
I'm kidding, I had a great time.
This is fun.
If you ever need us again, Jay, let us know.
Yeah, if you want us to rant at you again for 2 hours, oh my god.
I also feel like this is further.
It was very insightful.
Thank you for letting us.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye.